I'll check it. Tim, are you there? Can you hear me? Uh-oh. There we go. Let me turn it up. There. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, there we go. There's Tim. And here's the intro.
Interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Tuneless whistle.
And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
And now,
for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent.
I think we're already punishing the guilty.
My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio
Grave Robbers from Outer Space? I think I have to shorten up that intro there. I don't know. It's Radio Mysterioso. I've been toying with the idea here, Tim, of actually shortening that thing down and changing it a little bit. I don't know what I'm going to change it to. There's an intro from a... where is it? I recorded an intro from a movie. I think it was from Forbidden Planet, I think. And I was going to use that, I think, for part of my proposed new intro. I don't know where it is on here. No, not on here. I don't know. Anyway, we're here with Tim Benal, back once again after a couple-week hiatus here. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Father's Day, Greg.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's Father's Day today. Did you call your dad or went go and see him?
No. My dad passed away like 5 years ago. So.
Well, that was extremely poorly timed. I didn't know that, Tim. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I understand. It's not. I realized I kind of set myself. I walked.
You, God damn it! You brought it up.
I know. That's what I mean. I'm an idiot. As soon as I said that, I was like, oh, no.
Oh, no, now he's going to... All right, Tim. Well, I'm sorry about that, and I'm sorry to hear... I didn't even know that. You're very private about it. But I've been remiss in not talking to Tim for a while, so I think we'll have plenty to talk about. But I don't know what yet. Oh, I was looking at the BOA site, looking at some of the people interviewed recently, and continuing to expand. I like the interview with the Hitler isn't dead guy.
Yeah,
or wasn't
was
dead.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah? What?
It's such a compelling... It's so good to see somebody sort of pick up that theory. Although it's weird, because right after... This guy's book, I think, came out in the fall, and now Peter Lavenda has a book that Hitler, I think, went to the Philippines or something. So there's like competing theories out there now.
The Philippines? Jeez.
I believe he said the Philippines, yeah.
Yeah, well, there is that. What was the guest's name you had on?
Gerard Williams was the guy who wrote the Hitler in Argentina book.
Yeah. Did he talk about all the German settlements and strange German-looking buildings and everything and all the people that ended up there?
Yeah. He said something like it was like tens of thousands of Germans escaped Germany. Nazis escaped Germany. Middle management types.
Yeah.
And he said, like, a lot of them kind of end up going back, like, 20 years later or whatever, you know? It's like,
oh, when they thought
a weird part of history. You know?
Yeah, when they thought everything had cooled off.
Yeah. So, it's strange. Like I said, I kind of like that conspiracy theory that's sort of grounded in reality, in a sense. Plus, the guy, he was a force police major, so he brings a bit of gravitas to the theory that, you know,
He was a what? You're starting to cut out, unfortunately, already. He was a what?
He was a reporter for Reuters and
okay.
BBC and some of these major outlets. Yeah. Asia Press, I believe.
Yeah. It also reminds me, and I can't remember what it reminded me of. Well, besides the funny National Lampoon parody in the 1970s that showed Hitler sitting on a beach in South America with a drink in his hand. now I remember, and I've mentioned this before, I went to...
Hold on. Now my TiVo's going off. This is like a night of technical difficulties.
I think this happened last time. Your TiVo starts trying to call in. He's going over there and beating it to death. No, TiVo, no. Not now. I'm on the phone, TiVo. I want to wait till Tim gets back from beating up his TiVo here. Wow, the TiVo must be like across the house. They live in a huge mansion, Tim and his house. Are you at the home base of Binal Industries? You had to run like half a block down there to turn off your TiVo?
No, but it's like a little phone wire that's stuck in the back of the TiVo, and
I disconnected mine.
I know. That way they don't know about all the shows you watch.
Yeah, I don't want them to know that I'm watching Anthony Bourdain like a fiend, you know, so.
You like that Anthony Bourdain? I've seen a little bit of him. He seems kind of like a douche.
Yeah, well, that's...
Like pompous, kind of, you know.
Really?
Snooty, I guess, But I think he's a few of his shows.
Yeah, I think he's exactly the opposite. He's snooty with people he doesn't figure that he has time for, like people that aren't interested in what he's interested in. But the people that, you know, the countries he goes to, well, at least, you know, from the show, I can tell, and people that have met him that I know tell me he's like this. When he gets to countries and places and meets people, he's pretty cool with them and very genuine about being interested in what's going on in their corner of the world or the country or whatever, and he wants to learn. He genuinely wants to learn and has a curiosity about it. I think what he's a douche and a snooty person is about is people he thinks are just are not on that wavelength or not, you know, I don't know about below him or anything like that, but I tend to agree with his outlook on life, you know. Don't be too... What's the thing people say? Why do you like his show? And I said, well, his attitude is, don't be a dupe and don't be a dick. That's basically it. You know, you go somewhere, immerse yourself in the local culture, try and stay away from the touristy areas, and don't be rude to people and don't fall for BS. So that's kind of my attitude, which is why I like him. And he's got an edge to his views on things, and maybe that's why people think he's a douche. I don't know. You can go ahead and slice him to ribbons there, Tim. I don't mind.
No, I mean, like I said, I've only seen a couple shows, so.
I've watched.
I think one of them was like the 100th episode, so he was kind of patting himself on the back a lot, and it was just like, all right, I don't know.
Yeah, well, then maybe that was a bad
one.
I just
came in here, man. I don't know what your big accomplishments are.
Yeah. Well, especially if you haven't been somewhere, he makes you want to go there, at least with me. What I was going to say about Germans, back to that, before TiVo started yelling and screaming like a baby that hasn't been fed, was that I went to Alamogordo to interview Lynn Buchanan, the remote viewer.
Yeah.
Like in 96 or 7 or something like that. Not horribly long ago. And I didn't realize it until I got there. There are signs there for car dealers and other things in German in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And I thought about it. It's like, oh, there's a lot of paperclip people that ended up here working at White Sands.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
But
because that's where they're doing all the rockets and everything. So they end up settling there.
There was enough. I guess there's enough of a German population there that the car dealers catered to them, or at least they did then. With billboards in German.
Weird.
Yeah, it was very... I know I'm not making this up, and I'm fairly certain I didn't dream it or anything, because I remember coming into town and just going, what the hell's going on here? What's your favorite interview in the last year? I mean, apart from Nick and I.
my favorite interview in the past year. Well, I really like this new one with William Zabel, because he disappeared on us for like 3 years and then reemerged.
Is he through Facebook
somehow? We found him through Facebook.
He's not the filmmaker, is he?
What's that?
He's not the filmmaker, is he?
No. I don't think he's even related.
Oh, okay.
So he has like a whole Columbine conspiracy thing, and it was such popular episode. And then he disappeared, and everyone always wanted him back. And it was like you could never get him back because he wouldn't answer his calls or return any emails. And then finally, through Facebook, we found him again.
Huh?
And he said he had people have been trying to reach him for a long time, and that he couldn't get any phone calls and he couldn't get any emails and shit. So it was very weird, like that. Then he got right back into the conspiracy thing.
So he doesn't think that, I guess he might think that somebody was messing with him, but it hasn't stopped him, though.
It hasn't stopped him from doing the research or anything, no, but he seemed pretty, I don't know if I'd say sure about it, but he seemed pretty
convinced.
I guess he was pretty sure that the government or private, someone privately was messing with him,
Why would they do that? What did his research show? From what I got from I didn't listen to the episode. What I got from reading the really good write-ups you do of each one was that he found that there was a conspiracy that reached far deeper and higher than most people thought with the Columbine shootings.
Right. He implicated like the government, and originally he didn't say anything about all the evangelical Christians, but now he's tied them into this mess. And I think there's something definitely shady about Columbine, but I think maybe it was just shoddy police work after the fact, where people got away with being involved or knowing about it, and the government, the police there were kind of like, I think they were like, let's just move on and not drag this out with a trial and shit on these other conspirators and stuff.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of what I think. I can't really go over and dip my feet into this long, elaborate conspiracy.
I guess
you never know.
He goes into it on the show.
What's that?
I guess he will go into it in detail on the show if you go to Been All of America Audio and pick that show up, which is from 2011, right?
Yeah, well, the original one is, from 2009.
Oh, nine. Okay.
Came out this week.
Right. And then there was, this is the one that just came out recently. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, this one came out like Friday.
I mean, go ahead.
That's probably my favorite one, but I think a really good one. The downside of, I think we talked about this off the air, where like when I went on hiatus, I taped a ton of interviews, and the downside of that is like I still have tons of interviews that I taped from like March that I still haven't out yet, because I go like every 10 days. So
yeah,
there's still like an amazing interview with Ken Thomas that's like burning a hole in my pocket. Really, I can't wait to put out there. So there's about, I think there's like 5 interviews still that I haven't even put out yet that are still waiting to go up. So.
Oh, wow. Why is the Ken Thomas interview in particular burning a hole in your hard drive or pocket or whatever?
Because I felt like that it was so good. I really like thought it was just so good, and that it wasn't like classic. So it was sort of like we took a step back away, like back from conspiracy research, and sort of observed the art of it, if you will. Like, what's the point? I told him originally in our first interview, it was like, this is like a jam session.
Yeah.
And then I was like, if the last interview was like a jam session, then this one's like an intervention, because I don't know what, I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this, I just don't know what the point of conspiracy research is. It makes me feel hopeless.
Yeah.
To get into it. And then we got into a discussion about sort of conspiracy research versus the paranormal, and how the paranormal inspires like hopefulness, and conspiracies like sort of the opposite. So it got really into like sociological sort of stuff, and then all kinds of shit. So it was great.
Yeah, I've asked him that on the air too. Like, what's the point? And I think what Ken said was the point was you need to know where you are in history, maybe a better idea of what's going on with the people that want to control your life, and at least an awareness of it. Maybe you can do something about it, at least if the awareness is something, So,
right.
I'm sure he had.
But yeah, those are the two that stand out.
Yeah. You knew that Ken was my best man at my wedding, don't you?
I remember, yeah. I was there, like, right before the wedding, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's right, you were.
He was in some magazine that you had.
That's right. It was like St. Louis magazine. Like, every big city has their own. There's an L.A. magazine. I'm sure there's a Chicago magazine. This was the St. Louis magazine. And there was a nice big feature on him in there with nice big color pictures done by a professional photographer and everything. It was a really good article. I mean, it looked at him as kind of like a local hero instead of somebody like, hey, look at this weirdo.
Well, I was amazed because I think I forgot to mention this on the interview, but I was looking at his Wikipedia entry, and it was like, I guess he got kind of a shout-out in Baseball Prospectus, of all places.
Really?
Where it was an article about, I don't know, stats or something like that. And it's like.
Oh, that's right, because he found something.
Oh, he told you about that?
He found something in the archive, right, on a Negro League player. Is that right?
No. Someone just mentioned him in passing, like, you should know who he is, almost. It was like he was the household. It was like he was synonymous with conspiracy. That's what I thought was so cool about it.
You know, Rob Sterling, for a while, was trying to get the meme started or the saying started, America's best loved conspiracy researcher, to refer to Ken. Trying to get that trademarked. You ever had Rob Sterling on your show?
No, I haven't, actually.
He is a fun interview. I've known him for years, and you can talk to him about anything, including wrestling and porno. So I think you should have him on your show. Rob Sterling, he puts out right now the Conformist, and he has a site called The Conformist. He's had it for like 15 years or more. K-O-N-F-O-R-M-I-S-T, Conformist with a K.
Interesting. I'll check it out.
I'll get you in touch with him if you want. He's a fascinating. He was on my pirate radio show once. In the late 90s when I was doing that at a couple miles from here, he brought in the James Randi recordings, the ones with him on the phone with the boys.
Who?
Did you ever hear about this? The recordings of James Randi soliciting sex from a couple of underage, but mostly 18 years and older, at least they claim to be boys. They're recordings of him doing this.
Wow, I didn't know about that. Jesus.
Yeah, and his reaction to this was, I was helping the police to ensnare criminals or people soliciting sex over the phone, whatever. The excuse didn't wash with many people. Anyway, Rob somehow got those in like 1998 or so, and he came on my pirate radio show and we played those tapes and then made rude comments about them for 2 hours.
Oh my God.
And I don't know, one, where those recordings are. I've got them somewhere. And two, where the recording of the show is. I've got to find that recording. Although if I put it up, I might get sued by James Randi. I don't know.
Who knows? Jesus, that's just weird.
Yeah. So
if he didn't get arrested or anything, maybe he was working with the cops. Who knows? I don't know all the details of it. That's all, though.
Well, it's
fucking creepy as shit. I'm almost like speechless at how icky that sounds. Anyway, so.
Well, it's almost as creepy as you think it is. Listening to the tapes, if I can find them, I'll email you the copies of them if you want.
No, I don't think so. I might get arrested.
No, I mean, it's just recordings of him saying, yeah, you know, this, and he uses some different name, not Randi or Jim or anything like that. He says his name is Donald, I think, and guys
was
call
Donald
up.
Also, was Donald also amazing, or just was that just Randi Turk?
Well, I think Donald thought he was amazing because he'd call up and he'd start telling him what, asking him if they wanted to come over to his place and how big his dick was and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, Jesus. I'm switching phones now. Hold on. So okay. It won't be long. It'll be instantaneous. But
he's got to switch to another phone because he's recording this to send to James Randi.
There you go. Yeah. I'm recording it what?
He's recording this to send to James Randi. That's why he's got. Let me switch over to to the other phone. Excuse me.
I got to switch to the Randi line.
Yeah.
The
Randi
Oh, my God. That's just weird. No, so, I'm walking upstairs. I got on the portable so I can have a little freedom.
Okay.
It's always nice when I'm on someone else's show because I don't have to worry about quality control or anything.
Yeah.
As you saw by the TiVo explosion.
Yeah. That thing blew over, and now, you know, he came out when he was like 70 something and all that, which is fine. You know, it just, I don't care that James Randi is gay, and I'm sorry they had to hide it for so long because he was from a generation where you had to hide it.
Well, it's weird. You don't see too many gay people in the paranormal anyway, or at least, any of the, I wouldn't call them big names, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, he's not in the paranormal.
I'm sure there's gay enthusiasts, but
yeah, he's not in the paranormal. He actively fights against it, and there's a whole bunch that somebody could discuss about repression or perceived and actual prejudice and all that, and how that enters into his worldview. But
he's a magician, and, you know.
Well, that's the other thing, too. Every magician thinks everybody's fooling you because that's all they ever see.
Right, exactly. Like, look at Penn and Teller. They're obnoxious. Well, the one that talks is. The mute one's okay because it doesn't say shit.
Yeah.
But Penn Jillette's, like, obnoxious.
Well, James Randi's their hero.
Well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, you know.
See, I don't have any problem with Randi being gay or any part of his personal life. What I have a problem with him is just dirty pool and his fundamentalist thinking. So that's the deal. And then Penn and Teller. Long time ago, I wrote a column about Penn and Teller called what did I call it? Like Masters of Deception, because they take the stupidest part of anything that's paranormal with the dumbest people associated with it, which isn't hard in a lot of cases. And then they represent that as the entire thing.
Well, right. It's just lazy.
Yeah.
And it is deception. You're right. I mean, it's not like an accident that they do that.
Yeah.
You know. So, well, that's the annoying part. I mean, I wouldn't say that people in the paranormal play by the rules all the time or whatever.
No.
They certainly, they certainly come at it almost from a halfway fair sort of perspective, where it's like, I'm trying to get to the bottom of this, dude. Don't be that way.
Yeah.
And the rest, the skeptics, like, they're always cheating. I guess is the point I'm trying to make. The UFO people, they cheat a little bit, I guess, by probably obscuring some shit, but not like in a way that is so over the top. That skeptics.
Yeah. Well, I think they cheat without knowing it by lazy thinking. Hmm. And the skeptics are there to point that out, and they rightfully do point it out. But then they go overboard.
Right.
Well, I'm talking about fundamentalist skepticism, not people that say, look, just, you know, prove it to me. Otherwise, it's unproven. Not, it's false till it's proved, which is the normal stance, you know?
No, I mean, you and I are probably more skeptical than most of the people in the community, you know? It's like, I've seen enough garbage now to be plenty skeptical.
Well, I was listening to a lecture by Alan Watts. And he said he was talking about this problem people have where they have to come down on one side of an issue or the other, and that's where a lot of problems happen. Like the need to make a decision and the uncomfortable position of being in the undecided.
Yeah, I don't know it's weird. People are like afraid to not know something.
Yeah.
Especially in this day and age with the internet and everything.
Yeah, which,
like, they need to know everything all the time. It's like, why can't you just say, like, oh, we don't know. It's a mystery.
Yeah, or we don't know yet. And yet could be forever, you know, as far as we're concerned.
Right. Somebody asked on here about the drones in D.C. Have you heard about this? There was, like, a big UFO flap a few days ago or something.
Yeah, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Yes, even with a little trolling for UFO and paranormal information, I do at this point. I did hear about this, and then the news report said, no, it was a new...
drone?
Yeah, a new drone that's completely autonomous, designed by General Dynamics or something like that. That was either flying or on the back of a plane, and a bunch of UFO people said, "Well, that just doesn't wash. It doesn't look like." And it's like, you know what? I'm going to err on the side until I read more of it. I probably was that drone. What do you think?
I haven't even looked into it, but I say they're probably telling the truth that it's a drone. But I don't know. I haven't seen it. But I feel like on the side of ours, there's like, they tend to come back down on our side now with these drones and shit.
Yeah.
But like, I haven't seen it. So, I mean, it could be like something really hard to believe that's a drone. But those drones look weirder and weirder all the time anyway.
Yeah, look at the one that that Iraq captured. It's like... That it looks sort of like a plane, but it looks pretty badass.
Yeah, exactly. And like they're supposed to, they're like menacing and shit, like a UFO would be. So,
yeah. Well,
I mean,
go ahead.
Plus, if you see the if they just saw the drone, this is kind of a good parameter, I guess, like that I use with a lot of people in a sense, where it's like, if they just saw the drone there and it didn't do anything that suggests that it can do things that defy our ability in the air, then it probably was a drone.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if it did insanely fast right-angle hairpoint turns or something, then it'd be like, all right, that's probably a UFO or super-secret technology. But if it was just floating around in the air, then it was probably a drone.
Well, nobody's required to listen to any shows, but I'm glad I got this on, got this recorded. My friend John Shirley put me in touch with this guy who said he worked for a defense contractor. I believe it was in San Diego, which is full of defense contractors. And he said that they had developed a hybrid lighter-than-air airplane, like one that I said, would it reproduce a lot of the UFO movement? He said, yes, it exactly reproduces a lot of this UFO movement, where it'll go screaming through the sky and then it'll, you know, put on... You know, it has differential thrust so it can stop and then just hang in midair because it's with the barest amount of thrust because most of the weight's taken up by the by the gas envelope.
Yeah.
So I'm willing to bet that a lot of stuff, especially at night where you can't really tell what's going on, a lot more stuff, if that's true, might be, you know, defense stuff, defense related. High-performance, lighter-than-air aircraft hybrids. Who knows?
Exactly.
I mean, people say, well, it's not explaining UFOs. It's like, well, no, it doesn't explain, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, and it doesn't explain probably 8,000 other sightings, especially ones before they had developed that technology at least, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. Who knows what was going on then, but or even before that, you know. So, no, it doesn't
answer
everything, but it's another aspect that people should be aware of, I think.
Yeah, well, that's the problem with the UFO phenomenon in general. I was talking about this on Vaney's show, where it's like, I'm confounded by it to the point of exhaustion at this point. It's like, give me Bigfoot, because at least there, you're like an animal, you know, it's an animal, a misidentification, or it's some ultra, you know, ultra-dimensional thing. It's pretty simple, cut and dry, kind of. As opposed to, like, UFOs, where it's like, could be this, it could be that. There's, like, 2 dozen at least possible explanations for UFOs, and there's probably all of them.
Yeah, to some extent, somewhere, yeah. I mean, it could be extraterrestrials, and it could be, you know. I don't know. I love that I haven't made a decision on it, and I'm really happy that I haven't made a decision on a lot of stuff, because you immediately start to, you close yourself off, and then you start arguing against people that bring up valid points to you, and you have to ignore them in furtherance of the thing you've decided that it is. I have decided that UFOs are extraterrestrials from other planets. Well, then why have they been coming here for so long? Why do they need so many of the damn things? Why do they all look different? Why are there so many people visiting? Why, you know, if you accept current physics, how can they get here? All these things. There's questions about for every theory. So, you know, you make your decision, and you have to stew in that pot, and you end up looking stupid sometimes.
Right, right. Well, once you're married to a theory anyway, you gotta like every time a square peg comes around, you gotta spend all this time molding it into a round peg to slip into the hole that works for your theory, and it's like, that's exhausting.
Yeah. Oh, here's Robert Anton Wilson comes in. You become a defender of the faith.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this goes back to like our end of the year episodes, where it's just like UFOs, nah. Like we haven't even done. We're doing one UFO episode coming this coming week, and that's like the first UFO episode I've done this season, and that'll be episode 6 of the season. So
yeah.
Like UFOs are so far down the list of things that I'm interested in right now that it's not even fun.
Yeah.
It's just this, and I like the historical stuff. There's still a lot of UFO stuff that I love, like the historical aspect of it, you know, but I don't see the point in revisiting a lot of this other stuff.
No, I don't either. Know? Yeah, it's way down my list too, Tim. It's horrible to have to admit it's way down my list. But there was an article linked from Binal of America from Tony Morrell that I really enjoyed reading. It like rekindled my UFO porno mode. Just talking, he just brought up a couple cases that I'd never heard of, like this one in Italy with the guy with the 10-foot tall thing with pulsating skin that was like running around somebody's garden or something in 1970 or 1987 or something like that. Great story.
Yeah.
You know, and another one from, I guess it was Finland, with a couple guys that looked like they had lizard heads and like thin bodies with blue skin tight suits on. Just great stuff. I love those stories.
Exactly. See, that's the kind of stuff that's enjoyable. To me, it's like, I can't go over the disclosure thing again. You know, it's just not even, it's just not off the table. Like, I can't even, it's laughable. It's laughable because I got into this, like, I hadn't even looked at UFOs for, like, probably, like, 10 years since I was, like, a kid.
Yeah.
And I got into it, and I was like, boy, they've really made some good advancements on this UFO thing. It must be right around the corner. And that was, like, in 2003. So that was, like, 9 years ago.
And did you realize at some point they'd made, Sigrid says, how's that working out for you? Did you realize at some point they'd made no advancement whatsoever in this UFO thing virtually?
Yeah. It's not that they're about to turn the corner, it's that they're in a fucking round room. So,
because you had Alfred Weber on. What did you think of him when you first interviewed him?
That was a weird show because, like, I had actually had dinner with him at the X conference earlier that spring. And, you know, you become friendly with people even if you don't really agree with what they say. And I think back then I was still a wide-eyed optimist. It was really sort of falling, you know, the scales were falling from my eyes as I spoke to him. And it was like he had the show, I guess, and right at the last minute, and this was like I think probably within the first 10 shows I ever did, so I'm really a neophyte at all this. So he was like, I call him up, we're about to do the show, and he's like, let's do a simulcast, my show and yours, and just completely threw me off my game in a sense. Where it was like, are you going to interview me? Am I interviewing you? Is this a conversation? You know. And then Leslie Gunther, who I know you know, she asked him, because he bases a lot of stuff on remote viewing, and she was skeptical about remote viewing, and his answer was like really kind of dismissive. Where it was like, well, if you read the paperwork on remote viewing, then you'd know that it's this, that, and the other thing. And it was like, dude, Leslie's read everything, so I don't think you know what you're dealing with.
No.
I've stopped even reading a lot of this stuff, like, because it got, I started seeing stuff about, like, secret manned, not just, like, secret manned Martian missions, but, like, secret manned Martian missions that included Obama and stuff
like
that.
Oh, yeah, the Obama, what is it? The Obama went to Mars with a transporter beam something or other?
Yeah.
Or time travel like, to Mars or some damn thing.
Yeah, and it's like, dude, just getting into, like, Weekly World News stuff now. It's not.
I think it's worse.
You know. It is. It probably is, because at least it's Weekly World News. You knew they were just joking around. Like, this guy. And it's not even like that he believes. It's not even like almost the I wouldn't say the tragedy, but I can't come up with the right word. But, you know, the thing that's sad about it all is that it's not even whether or not he believes it. It's that, like, he spreads all this out there, and a lot of people up on it. Like I actually recommended you to somebody at a bar the other night, because we were talking, UFOs came up and stuff, and he was, like, asking me all about the Dulce base.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, most of that shit is bullshit. I'm like, you should read Project Beta to get an understanding of, like, how crazy all the information out there is.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he might not like it.
Because I think that book sums up pretty well, like, how the humans are put in the punch bowl.
Yeah.
And have messed up the whole equation for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I think there probably is or was some sort of facility there, but to my mind at this point, it means that it was one of those things where you tell somebody where something is or sort of near where it is, then you see who comes around there hanging out looking for it.
Right, right. And he tied in a whole, like, alien battle. It wasn't just there an underground base. It was like,
oh,
isn't
yeah.
there an underground base in Nulcy where there's aliens working with people and they have a fight once?
Yeah, that's all
like,
the
no.
Phil Schneider and I can't remember who the other guy was. There's listeners yelling the name out right now. But, yeah, that's basically the Philip Schneider stuff.
Movie, but
yeah.
I would love to see that as a film.
Yeah, well, if Ken was on, he'd be saying, well, that's the story that, what's his name? Who was the guy in the Maury Island?
Yeah, I know who you're thinking of, too. I can't think of it off some.
I can't think of names anymore. And once again, listeners are yelling his name. But he claimed that he had been in some sort of underground firefight with some underground dwelling, something or others, in Burma during, like, during or after World War II. Ken's probably going to be yelling too if he hears this, but yeah, it's a story. It's a story that's been around for a while, and it just keeps coming up in different forms. I mean, who knows? Maybe whoever spread that story heard that older one by this guy whose name I can't remember.
You know,
God damn it!
It may be true. Did you lose me?
No, I didn't lose you. Yeah, well, it may be true too. But I on the list of likely stuff, that's probably down near the bottom to me.
Right, exactly. That's the weird pile of the laugh, which I believe is like anything that's kind of scary. It's like, it's probably not true, but I kind of hope and wish it was. Because, like, that would make the world such an interesting place. Like, there really was a secret place where aliens and humans work together and they get in arguments and stuff. And, you know, it'd be awesome. It'd be a lot better than if it's just a bunch of nerdy scientists there developing drones.
Yeah.
Like, imagine, like, if you got to, you know, what a blunder that would be if, like, somehow you could go to, like, any place in the world and, like, you, like, went to Area 51. You're like, all right, where are the aliens? And it's like, there's no aliens here, man. Like, oh, I blew it. I blew it.
I might have to switch over to the phone here maybe after the hour because it's getting fairly ridiculous with the internet connection here, which people at the station keep assuring me never happens. Oh, no. That hasn't. You shouldn't be having that problem. Well, yes, I am. And if anybody from the station is listening now, you can hear it. Tim's getting kind of...
It's a little touch and go, but I can hang in there if you want to switch at the hour.
We'll switch it. If it gets unbearable, then I'll go on musical break here, and we'll switch over to miking the phone, which is the fidelity is not as good, but it doesn't cut out. So,
this disclosure thing and the disclosure people, I just don't. I've said this before, and I recently on shows that I've done, and I think that this would resonate with you too. I'm at a moral paradox in a way, because it's like I would love for UFO disclosure to happen, but in a way I also hope that it doesn't, because I feel like people in the disclosure movement deserve to be rewarded with that kind of success.
Yeah, well, the thing is, and we've talked about this before, if there is some kind of I hate the word disclosure on the UFO subject, it's not going to be what people. It's not going to be. Really, the most important thing is it's not going to be what the disclosure people want to hear. I'm almost certain
right.
of that.
If it's going to start a whole other fight for like a whole other generation of UFO researchers.
As soon as they say, well, yeah, it's there is something unknown. Yes, it is intelligent. Yes, it has been in our skies. And no, we don't think it's from another planet. Or no, it's, you know, it's there's no way to tell what it is or... you know, or how to control it or anything like that. And no, it's not, you know, it's a lot of the stuff you've heard has been rumors on top of rumors, disinformation campaigns, wishful thinking, all that. And the basic thing is that, yeah, there's another intelligence and that's about it. And if disclosure and UFO people don't hear exactly what they want to hear, they're going to scream cover up again.
Yeah, they'll always say that. I mean, they're just not going to be satisfied as it is, so.
Wait,
even if they brought out, like, an alien.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not a guy in a suit, or that's a hologram.
Yeah.
Like, oh, stop. Just let it go. So, and can you imagine, I just don't want to hear them crowing about their success if there was a UFO disclosure. It's just, I would be remiss. I'd be ashamed, you know?
Well, I don't think there's any one danger. Yeah. There's one, no danger of disclosure of any of this information. And two, if it is, like I just said, personally, I think it's not going to be what they want to hear.
Right, right.
It's probably not going to be what anybody wants to hear. And it'll probably be so weird and cryptic and convoluted that it'll take people a while to figure out that that's what it is. In fact, Grant Cameron, who's been on the show once, and is helping me with this in the background here with this Falcon speech I'm going to make, his contention is, well, it's already been disclosed. How many times do you want to have a government document discussing something that happened and people coming out into public and saying, I saw this thing in a military base? Or how many times do you need to hear that?
Right.
So, and, you know, his contention is it's happened already. I kind of tend to agree with him.
I'm in agreement in that sense, yeah. It's actually like the disclosure people don't even want disclosure. They just want to be taken they just want the subject like taken seriously and added to, I don't know, the general dialogue. But then it's like, we're in a depression, man. Like, I don't care about UFOs. That's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, turn the country around. If you want UFOs to do it, go for it. But just do something to turn this mess around.
Yeah. If
it doesn't involve UFOs, I don't care. Yeah.
If it's that big of a secret and it's that important, then it might be it's like sitting in the hand. It's in the hand that they're waiting for to deal for some, you know, at some point. Who knows what that might be, what the reason for dealing that card in the deck might be. I don't know.
Right, right. It would have to be like, well, you know. I've said it to somebody before, I don't know if it was you or not, but it's like, the preliminary, it's down, eventually someone will open, maybe that'll be something that facilitates this. But that's the only sort of world-changing moment I can think of people would sort of get behind all this.
Yeah. Oh, Bennett, who has another show here, just sent me an extremely long text message about Randy. The whole story of the so-called Randy solicitation tapes is online, though they can't find the tapes themselves. They were recorded by Randy as a police sting. A lawyer used them in a defamation case against Randy. They were played in court at Randy's insistence, and he explained them. If they were what you think they were, he would have been arrested. They never come up again. He lost the defamation case for the record, but the jury awarded the defendant $0. Oh, yeah, that was the crazy guy from New York whose name I can't remember. Pull out those tapes. I would love to hear them. And know what they really are.
My phone's about to die, but I've made it. I think back to another phone. So.
Oh, okay.
Can I call this phone at this last like, half an hour? There we go. All right. I'm back.
Well, maybe it has something to do with the phone. I don't know. I hope. He also says the sound is fine. According to Bennett, who as far as I know, would be on Randy's side. That the whole case was decided and that it really was him helping the police in a sting.
So, yeah, UFOs, what are we going to do with them?
I don't know. Probably throw up our hands in disgust and wait for good UFO porno like Tony has posted at his site.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't see, nothing's come along to be very exciting, and it's just too, you know. I wish I was around in the 80s. That's when it sounds like, or the 70s. That's when it sounds like things were really crazy and awesome. Now it's like, you didn't get pretty stuff like that anymore. You know? Back then it was like, you got MJ-12 and Roswell's exploding and the abduction thing's going crazy. It's like, oh my God. Every turn it was a new sort of wild, long-standing development.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I read... I first started reading Bud Hopkins books in like 88 or 9 or something like that, 87. And then they'd been out. The first one had been out for like 9 years at that point, I think. And that, you know, that amazed me. And, you know, the abduction thing was a big new thing. And, it, you know, there was only little bits like, you know, there was the Herbert Shermer case and there was Barney and Betty Hill and there was the Pascagoula and Travis Walton. Kind of few and far between. And then suddenly they're coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
And I still don't know what to make of it. I think there is something to contact with some extra human intelligence. Now, what form that takes, I do not know. And I have a feeling that probably half or more, maybe way more of the abduction thing, as we know it, is not from... if there was somebody there with a camera while this was happening, that's not what you would see. What people recollect and tell abduction researchers, I'm sure that's not what's happening. I'm almost sure that's not what's happening.
Right, right. It would, like, if you had a camera, it might not even be like an alien photo of that. It would be like a ball of light.
Yeah.
Like,
or somebody,
how do you even prove anything with that? Anything.
Yeah. Or somebody just lying there squirming around. Although there are cases where, you know, external witnesses have seen weird stuff going on. And that's fine, but I don't know. Drawing that conclusion to, you know, the standard abduction thing, I think is erroneous because, for one thing, we don't know. We don't know for sure how the human mind works in those situations, and we can't reproduce it on demand, which is, you know, unfortunately, that's how we deal with evidence now, fortunately or not. But that's the only way we can do it. So that's, you know, it's undecided, you know. Instead of saying,
yeah,
that's bullshit, I'm just kind of going to say, well, I think probably most of it is not too mysterious, except for the fact the way we perceive things and make up our mind about things and process information, especially weird, unfamiliar information. And it's somewhere between there and something external. Who knows?
Right, right. Well, the sad part is, like, it was so exciting, and now it's dead. UFO
yeah.
research, I mean. I mean, not abduction research.
Why do you think it's dead?
Like,
why would you think it's dead at this point? I mean, I agree with you, but what do you think killed it?
Well, I think I said this on Vaney's show. It was sort of like a rock band almost in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it was like the Beatles. And like John and Paul, it was as if John and Paul died and you lost Hopkins and John Mack. Like, all you're left with is David Jacobs, and he's like Ringo.
I've never heard it put that way, and you're right.
You know, they had their burst fame. They had, like, their 15 minutes of, or, you know, 15 years of fame. And,
yeah,
like, two of the main respectable dudes are gone, and all that's left is, like, the one dude that no one takes seriously anymore because he did a bunch of weird shit a few years ago.
Yeah, to that woman who we got in trouble for on your show by saying, Nick and I saying, I don't care.
Right.
And a lot of people saying, yes, but you have to care.
But what?
A lot of people came on the list saying, why don't they care? They must care. If they don't care, then they're rude and mean and heartless.
Right, right. It's like, oh, you're complicit in it or something.
Yeah.
No, I just don't care. It's like, you know,
yeah,
the longer you're in this, the more you have the ability to shut off caring and all of this.
That is a really good quote. I think you should. I think that should be on T-shirts, Tim. That's a good one.
Thank you.
It just shuts off. The longer you're in this, the more it shuts off your caring.
Because you just roll your eyes. Like, oh, who cares?
Yeah, not this again. The other,
I'm kind of disappointed. It's like already halfway 2012. But it hasn't been much, you know. I thought this was going to be like the year of the insanity of 2012-ness, but it's been kind of blasé. It'll be interesting to see what happens in December.
Yeah, I think the wad was blown in the years leading up to this year.
I know, that's what I mean. It was getting more and more overblown, and now we've got to 2012, and like no one's doing anything about it.
No, because everybody's been hearing about it for so long. Now they're just waiting for it to happen. And
right.
I think there's, and we talked about this when you were on the show last time. I think there's probably a 99.999% chance that nothing will happen because of a lot of various things. Not the least of which is different methods of interpreting that information, the Mayan calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Didn't you say you hoped that there actually, you kind of in the back of your mind hope something happened?
Yeah, that goes back to my, you know, my, if it's terrifying and frightening and everything, it would be kind of nice that if it did happen, you know. If I had a pole slip, it goes back to, you hear that Patton Oswalt stand up thing where it's like, if you're going to die, you might as well die of apocalypse or something like that, that die than by being hit by a bus.
Yeah.
So, at least when you're up in heaven, people like, I think the bit is like, oh, you died. It's like, oh, choked on a bone. He's like, the fucking apocalypse, man. It was amazing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, how would that, be great? You get up there, you're like, wow, the pole flipped, and then my house fell on me, and then a coyote ate my face while I was waiting to die. It was quite the show.
Yeah. Most people are, they're not going to die in the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, on December 31st, 1999, we went out to Malibu to a couple of friends' house because we were afraid, not that the world was going to end, but that, like, the power would go out and people would go nuts and all that. And at least if we were, like, way the hell out there, it wouldn't be such a big deal. And, of course, nothing happened. So, and that
was the same way. I hold up in my basement with, like, a bottle of, like, Jack Daniels and, you know. Barely made it to midnight and then just passed out and nothing happened. So yeah. I missed out on a good party somewhere.
We jumped in a freezing cold pool in our, I think we were naked. A couple friends of mine and I, we all jumped in their pool right at midnight. We looked at our watches and then jumped right in. That was our December 31st, our New Year's Eve 2000 activity. And that's how our world ended. And, yeah, nothing happened, and who knows. And I don't know why people – and it's funny. I listen to radio shows and read stuff from, you know, years and years and years ago, the century before that. And there's always people saying that everything's going to end, and it never ends. So when it really does end, who the hell's going to know? Still there?
Yeah, I briefly lost you there.
Oh, what I said was that people keep saying the world's going to end and it doesn't. So, and I think we talked about this before. Who the hell's going to know when it's going to happen? Nobody's going to know. It's going to happen when nobody thinks it does, or it's just not going to happen. It's just things are going to accrete into something different that we won't recognize, you know, a million years from now.
Right. Well, it's not 9/11, except for, like, some extreme conspiracy researchers. Like, I guess they say Alex Jones, like, predicted 9/11, but, you know, I think he also probably predicted, like, a whole bunch of other things at the same time, and that was one that, you know, he had one hit for, like, 50 misses, but I don't know. I don't watch.
What?
I don't have the tapes.
Yeah. What?
They don't have them out anymore.
I would like to
so
see,
like,
a document.
All you ever see is the 3-minute clip where he predicted 9/11. You don't see the other, like, 57 minutes of him predicting all kinds of other shit.
Yeah, well, when did he predict it? What was it that he said? And is there some record of when he actually said it? And this is an interpretation of what he said? Or did he actually say it was going to happen then, or what? I mean, a lot of people...
I think the prediction was in July. I'm sure people are going to, like, be all over this, but I think it was in July before 9/11, and he said that there was going to be a false flag terror event that would be blamed on Osama bin Laden. And he may have even gone further than that. But it was fairly... It was good. I'll give him that.
Okay.
You see it, and you're like, that's good. Wow, that's good. But like I said, you don't know if it was like prediction number 8 of 80. So
yeah, well,
the point I'm trying to make is, like, with 9/11, no one ever saw that coming.
No.
So, and it changed the world.
Yeah.
So
that would be the stopped clock theory, which is what Ed Dames used to rely on a lot, I think. And
what theory is that?
The stopped clock theory, meaning it's a stop clock is right twice a day. It tells time
right,
the exactly. entire, you know, ticks off of every second, but twice a day it's actually right, you know, if you predict the time, you're actually right on a couple times during the day. So, or I mean, if the clock stops, it's actually right twice a day. So that you know, it's the same way with the people doing psychic predictions. They make 3,000 of them, and then one of them is, hey! One of them came true, so... I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, I rely much on predictions.
The problem with Alex Jones is there's so much noise there. It's hard to, you know, if that's been all he said, or if he, all of his other, you know, activities had nothing to do with the government taking over the planet and all that, maybe more people would have listened.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's just too much. He puts out too much content anyway, where I can't keep, who has time to, like, listen to all that and watch all that?
Some people do, apparently, I guess.
No, I know. It's kind of sad. It's like, if the sinister evil New World Order is taking over the planet, why, I don't know, why waste all your time listening to how they're doing it all the time? go and enjoy the freedom you have left.
Yeah.
Before it's all gone.
Yeah, that's, well, that and try and be aware of it, but, you know, what can you do about it at this point? I don't know. Be aware, maybe help it affect your voting, how you interact with people, and, you know, if something looks like it's coming down the pike and enough people are pissed off enough about it. Well, yeah, what did the 99 percenters thing do? It made a lot of people aware that a lot of people own a lot of stuff and most of us don't. Well, you and I and people we know already knew that. And what did it change? It didn't change dick.
Yeah. Well, probably the 99 was like two democracies.
Say that again?
It was like, not everyone needs to say.
Say that again? You can't even hear me.
99% was like two democracies, where it was like, I don't know.
I think
everybody's equal.
I think we're going to have to use the phone, Tim, because I didn't hear. I heard like four words of that for the last 30 seconds.
Right. Should we do a musical break and then
yeah,
phones? And
oh, room? Of course, now it's working fine.
Of course. Power,
man. Yeah, Sigrid says, because you were speaking truth to power, man, that's why it didn't work.
So we'll keep going on this.
It cut again. I think I'm going to find something to play here, and then we'll be right back in a second here, I guess. I'll call you on the phone. Let me find something to play first.
All right.
Well, I guess I can
I
can play the It Ain't Me, Babe by Sebastian Cabot. That one's pretty good. Have you heard that one? Oh, he hung up. Okay. Oh, well, it says he hasn't hung up. Okay, let me call Tim on the phone here. Here's Sebastian Cabot doing it on eBay. Yes.
All right.
Go away from my window. Leave at your own chosen speed. I'm not the one you want, babe.
Oh,
I ain't
no.
The one you need. You say you're looking for someone never weak but always strong to protect you and defend you, whether you're right or wrong. Someone to open each and every door. But it ain't me, babe. No, it ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe. Go lightly from the ledge, babe. Go lightly on the ground. I'm not the one you want, babe. I don't let you down. You say you're looking for someone who will promise never to part. Someone to close his eyes for you. Someone to close his heart. Someone who will die for you and more? Ooh, it ain't me, babe. No. It ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe. Go melt back into the night, babe. Everything inside is made of stone. There's nothing in here moving. Anyway, I'm not alone. You say you're looking for someone who will pick you up each time you fall, to gather flowers constantly and to come each time you call, a lover for your life and nothing more. Hey, ain't me, babe. No, it ain't me, babe. It ain't me you're looking for, babe.
Oh boy, It Ain't Me, Babe by Sebastian Cabot. Does this work? Which one's on?
Yeah, I was just saying, I sound like a Shatner on his thing. I couldn't understand. I finally got the words all of a sudden, and I'm like, that's an Ain't Me, Babe. Where's this guy?
Wow, why isn't this microphone picking up? Yeah, well, it's got something. We'll just assume that it's picking it up.
oh my God, I just saw this. I don't know if you're involved in this, but I don't remember if you're in the film, but I was kind of browsing around Netflix, and I see that Paul Kimball's Best Evidence, Top 10 UFO Sightings, is now streaming on Netflix.
Oh, right? Really? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
No, I'm not in it.
Mac Tony is in it.
Yes, Mac is in it. Stan
Pope and Don Ledger are.
Yeah.
Looking at the thing.
Yeah. I'm not in it, but I'm really glad he's finally got that up on Netflix. That's good that he got. I don't know what legal things he has to go through to post his own film. I guess he still owns the rights to it. And if people want to see Best Evidence Top 10 UFO Sightings, check that out on Netflix. It's probably one of the, and not because Paul's a buddy of mine, I do think it's probably one of the best UFO films.
That's excellent. Yeah, you should definitely check it out.
Especially for people that, you know, like people that are don't really care about, or well, not really care about, because then they wouldn't care, but people that are uninformed about the UFO subject. That will not make a, I don't think it'll make a believer out of them, but it'll make a, it'll make them interested. It's like, well, there's actually serious people that take it seriously that have seen strange things.
Right, and it'll give you a good base of key cases to cite if someone tries to, you know, shoot down your belief in UFOs.
Yeah. The thing I like about, and I remember when he was shooting the film, I went into his office in Halifax, and there was a huge, like, whiteboard with all these, like, names and, like, hash marks. And I said, Paul, what is that? And he goes, that's the voting for the top 10 cases from all these different researchers. And
yeah.
Nick voted, and Nick voted, meaning Pope and Redfern. Don Ledger, all the people that are in it, Mac. That was their votes. It wasn't Paul's decision, actually. He had a vote. But the vote was based on what the researchers in the film thought was important.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's a great film. It's great. That's why I was kind of excited there just now when I saw that it was on Netflix, because people have asked me over and over like where it is and everything. So it's good that they can watch it now.
Good. Well, I hope it also actually creates an income stream for him too, because he needs it from that film and from any film. You know, patronize our friends and colleagues.
Exactly.
I noticed you have ads on your site now. How long have those been on there?
Oh, for like a year. They're only like little Google ads, though. It's not. I didn't really go crazy. It's almost that I'm just too lazy to take them down. They're good, like space fillers.
Oh, okay. Because I don't. It seemed like there was more, or they used to be smaller. Anyway, I just seemed to notice them this time. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Well, I hope they're giving you some, like, slight income.
Slight is definitely the word, but yeah, I get a little bit of money, like, every few months. So it's not even like, I certainly can't, like, quit my job or anything, but.
Right. I just got to, go ahead.
I enjoy working, actually. Working is better than trying to make a living doing this.
Yeah, well, there was a song by Timbuk3, and the line in there was, looking for work is worse than actually working.
That's true, yeah.
Unless you're doing something, you know, if this could make a living for you, that would be great. But when you start trying to make the paranormal your living, a lot of times you start to look really silly because you start to get very desperate.
Right, right. Well, and you get frustrated. That's what was happening to me a lot. You just get frustrated trying to, you know, to sing for your supper gets very frustrating when you don't really get the kind of the long support that you hope for, I guess.
Yeah, I took yours and Miles Lewis' suggestion, and when I put up the new site, I put up a donate button, and people actually donated. I mean, enough to actually keep to pay my server fees for a few months, which was great. That made me very happy.
Yeah, that's all you really need. I mean, that's kind of how I am. It's like as long as all the technical stuff is paid for, then I'm not looking to like make money off of this, because if you know, I would never want to go premium or anything. That's too much like responsibility for me.
Yeah, and it takes over your life, I think, and it takes over more of it than you want it to, unless that's your job. And if it is your job, it almost becomes torture. Like, when I was a kid, I really liked to cook, and my mom said, do you want to be a chef? And I said, no, because if I had to do it for a job, I wouldn't like it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So, I'm happy sort of with the state of it now.
Yeah.
And we talked about this towards when we did the beginning of the year episode, where it's like, when you're working more, you kind of have more time to think about what you want to do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
When you have all the time in the world, it's like, you can always do stuff later.
Yeah.
So you don't end up doing anything.
Yeah,
that's how I am.
Yeah, if you don't have any time, if you don't have much time, you got to budget it. So you have to budget it around, you know, doing this thing that you want to do. And you keep up pretty well with the show. I mean, with a kind of you might not think so, but I think it's kind of a good regular schedule with an ever-changing array of guests that are actually interesting, and you're not you know, chasing your tail, really, kind of like I am, just by coming in once every week or two or three and getting Tim here on again.
I like doing your show.
Yeah, because I'm so lazy. I have to wait for Tim to go, hey, you need somebody on your show? And I go, yeah, it's always fun to have Tim on, of course. Somebody just emailed me, I think, about... Oh, it was a comment on the Jim Moseley show, and they said that because I got in a little discussion with Moseley about Bill Moore, and Moseley's saying, oh, that guy, you know, he had some very unkind or slightly unkind words for Moore, which is fine, you know. And I stuck up for him, and the guy, the commenter said, well, you know, it's kind of, he was trying to make money off what he was doing, and he was kind of hucksterish about it. And I was thinking, so if. If you've got to make a living off your research, that's a crime, apparently. It's not a crime for Richard Dolan. But then again, people don't hate Richard Dolan for perceived slights against the UFO community. I think that's what the difference is.
Right, right. You can't win if you're Bill Moore. He made the right move just to get out of this mess, I think. He, you know, it's not... He did exactly what I would do, so I can't fault him at all.
You mean if somebody from the government said, we're going to give you UFO information, which you can then, you know, use in your research and disseminate to the public, all you have to do is watch people for us, pass a few notes to people, and generally report on people's beliefs and activities, you would have done it?
I'm already reporting on people's beliefs and activities. It's like I'm still waiting for the check. So... I mean, in a way, it's like it's your own personal journey anyway, so I can't fault him for...
Yeah.
It's kind of like if the government came and was like, we're going to give you all the information you want about the UFO thing, but you have to drop out of ufology forever. I would take that deal like in a heartbeat. Like, as long as I know, I can't really, you know... I lucked out. I lucked into it. What you offer me, that's kind of what I'd say. So, I know and I'm out.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I would take that deal, too. But the thing is, I bet it wouldn't be the answer you wanted.
Oh, I'm sure it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
But then I'd get so frustrated, I'd probably just bail. I'd be like, all right, well, now they'll give me, you know. Which is probably kind of what he did. You know, he's like, I'm kind of tired of this. Not giving me anything good. I'm going to blow the whistle on them.
Yeah. Well, I think
he... Which is probably what I would do.
Yeah. Well, he blew the whistle on himself, too, actually.
Right, right.
I think a lot of people forget that other people were doing this, too. To varying degrees, and we've never heard from them.
Oh, I'm sure.
And that's their prerogative to not really have to say anything about it.
Now, did he know of other people that were doing it, or is that...
Yeah, at least a couple, but he never told me. I did throw a couple guesses at him, and he smiled at me.
All right.
And I'm not going to make those accusations on the air in
public. No, I understand, yeah.
If people know anything about the history of what was going on at that time, they could probably guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And a few of them.
It was a crazy time.
Yeah, and a few of them will probably email or call me when I do this Falcon thing on the 30th for this online conference thing.
Yeah, so, well, you're finally going to blow the lid on this Falcon thing, right? That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. Where did you hear that?
I think you mentioned it earlier in this show.
Oh, okay. I don't know how much I want it to get around. I want it to get around enough so that people buy tickets to see the thing, but I don't want to say, hey, everybody, after 30 years, it's like, I can't do that. I just can't.
No, I'm excited. I may buy it now. When is this, June 30th?
June 30th. Go to Alternative Universe Eye Conference. Alternate Universe Eye Conference. Kevin Smith is hosting the show, is hosting it. He does the technical stuff.
Well, it's very interesting, this whole iConference thing. It's an interesting sort of... It must be working out pretty well if they've done another one now, so...
Well, you know, it's working out well in the sense that there's very little outlay on the organizer's part financially. You just have to, you know, have the wherewithal to be able to pick up a Skype video and audio feed and rebroadcast it. And then take phone calls or Skype calls from people after, you know, for the last 15 or so minutes of the presentation. And each presentation is about 45 to 50 minutes and then 10 to 15 minutes of questions.
Yeah.
So it's like a regular conference, except you don't leave the house and, you know, you can do it in your underwear. And it costs $10 to see five people. And they keep saying they're going to put up... recordings of the past conferences, but I haven't seen them yet. It's just
yeah.
I think the guy Kevin has so much stuff on his plate. He just kind of keeps saying I'm going to do that, and it keeps getting pushed back. But I'm sure people will record and talk about it. You know what all the presenters are going to say, and I sort of have a hand in organizing it. I got Micah Hanks to be on the next one, so. I have the power to bring people on. That's for my part, but I don't have the power to veto anybody. It has to be, you know, you can be outvoted by the. There's I think me and Walter and Kevin and a couple other people, but I can be outvoted by the others if they're going to have somebody on. If I think the guy's a total wacko, I can't really say anything about it. Even you know if I'm outvoted.
Yeah, like the UN Security Council.
Yeah, exactly. So
well, it's interesting. You know, I've taken an interest in conferences, as you know, so I find that to be an interesting sort of concept.
Yeah.
Although you can't really, I mean, I shouldn't say this because you're like behind all this, but I do love the feel of a conference.
I do too. Well, it's not going to wipe out conferences. I don't think it'd do that at all. I personally don't want conferences wiped out because once in a while there's something interesting at them, and more importantly, you get to see people and hang out with friends you haven't seen in a long time.
Exactly.
You know, whether you agree with them or not. I don't totally agree with Stanton Friedman. He's not my friend. I don't totally agree with Richard Dolan. I consider him, I guess, a friend. But I don't get to see him except at conferences, and we hang out and talk about 19th century baseball and other shit. We don't talk about UFO stuff, really.
Right. Well, I mentioned this. I did a little media blitz a couple of weeks ago.
What happened?
Nothing. I just did a couple shows. But at the end of both of those shows, I teased that I'm definitely... The first inaugural Banal conference is in the planning stages now.
So. Oh, excellent.
Yeah, because I've seen, you know, well, someone asked me what I would bring to the table that's different from the conferences I've been associated with before, and all I could say was better financial planning. So, if that's all I bring to the table, then it'll be a success compared to the ones I've been a part of already.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
And I'm just tired of, I mean, I'm always happy to be an MC somewhere. So if people are out there doing something and they need an MC, I'd be happy to do it. But it's like, I'd like to have a certain amount of creative control. And
yeah.
The only way you can do that is to be the boss of the conference. So.
Yeah. No, there's no way around. I'm associated with the iConference, but I don't have total creative control. All I have control over is I can bring people in. And when I want to present something myself, I usually have a slot to be able to do it.
Right.
And actually, the presenters have total control over how they want to present whatever it is, because all they're giving you is a video feed and audio and whatever slides they want to show. And they don't even have to take questions if they don't want, although that's part of our, you know, the contract. You kind of have to take questions.
Is that pre-taped or is that live?
They're live. They're live. I mean, when we do it on June 30th, it will be live in real time. I mean, they switch to people in different areas. You know, Micah's going to be in South Carolina, and I'm going to be out here in LA, and we'll be sending a live video feed. So when people, that's what I said about people asking questions. If you ask questions, you're asking them to the speaker at that moment, as if it was a you know, in-person conference. It just happens to be by internet, so you're sitting there by yourself. But You can see the person. You can hear everything they're saying. You can, you know, if you want, you could probably record it. Although I don't know if my partners would be happy about me saying that. But there's nothing to stop people from recording it and having it. And when I'm done with it, I told Grant and a couple other people that I was going to send them my notes if they wanted to use them. I don't have any problem with sharing that information. And the other thing is I'm going to take the money that I make from it in case people think I'm trying to be mercenary and give it to somebody. I'm going to give it to a charity.
With a conference thing, if you have books and stuff, that's how the conference people make their, you know, that's how the speakers make money.
Yeah.
So it's difficult. It's an interesting sort of financial situation.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Maybe more. I was only involved with one where I got the check, seeing how much I, and it was the very first one, so hardly any people know about it. There might be more now. I do not know. I've not asked for nor seen the financial statements from the other conferences. There's been three now.
Well, it's a great idea. I give them credit for that. I like it a lot. It's a good concept.
Yeah, it's just a venue. That's all. It's an alternative. Alternate. It's an alternate to what you would, you know, normally have to go through by, you know, getting on a plane or traveling or taking time off of work and paying for the hotel and all this other stuff. And it's $10 for five people for 5 hours. I mean,
right. Jesus. In this day and age with this economy, it's a really good idea because no one, you know. I don't think all the conferences I've been to in the last, like, 4 or 5 years have been local. I can't think of anything, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd have to really save up to go somewhere.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, there's West Coast conferences that happen basically in Laughlin and Las Vegas. People go there. And sometimes Mesquite, I think they have the UFO Congress. But these are all, you know, within a few hours' drive of major population centers in Southern California and Las Vegas, so... And then a few of them are in Northern California, so they've got that whole crowd there, and some people from down here come up there. And then the East Coast ones are, you know, within less than a day's travel, you hope, for most people going to those.
Right. There's really not that many good ones on the East Coast, so it's even more annoying in the sense. Well, that's kind of why I want to get behind my own show, because I don't think there's anyone doing a really good show on the East Coast.
Yeah, not that I'm inviting myself, because I don't know if I'd have anything to say, but who would you think of, who would come to mind as a speaker there?
We'd have like a big star to headline.
Yeah.
And then we fill out the underneath with, you know, stars and people who have good stuff to talk about.
Right.
That would kind of be me. And like the whole goal would be like that each person that speaks has something that's going to completely blow your mind.
Yeah.
You know? And if they're popular with my listeners and stuff, that would be ideal too.
Right.
Because like I can tell, like one person I'd like to bring out is like Jason Offutt.
Yeah.
Like I think that people who listen to the show love him, and his stories are really good. And I think that to people who hadn't heard the show before, they'd be completely blown away by the stuff that he has.
Right. So,
that would be kind of like that would be like a good example.
When are you planning this for? After the apocalypse?
Yes, definitely after the apocalypse.
So
probably not until, you know, in an ideal world, it would be like next, like a year from now. But I think if anything, it'll probably be like 2 years from now.
Oh, so okay, still, okay.
Like maybe in a year, I'll be able to announce something tangible.
Right. Okay. And by
because
then,
like,
go ahead.
Because I have a. I have somebody that wants to put the show on with me, and he's just a listener, and I've hung out with him like for the last couple of years, so I know that he's normal and shit, and he has a wife and a kid, and he's not, you know, he's not mental, so...
He's not a crazed lone nut?
What's that?
He's not a crazed lone nut?
Exactly. Well, that's the thing about lone nuts. They don't work well with others.
Yeah, that was that Bill Hicks joke about Oswald the lone nut. Oh, you mean the guy with the wife and the daughter?
yeah. So he understands fiduciary responsibility,
uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is key. And yeah. I do, too, because I got no money. So if I'm going to put money into something, I need to be sure that, like, I'm going to walk away either breaking even or making enough to do the next show.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like kind of like what you say, you know, if I make a bunch of money off of this, it's like, well, I'm not going to turn around and just bail and leave the community because I made a bunch of, like, what, $1,000 or something. It's like, yeah. I'm just going to go back into the pile for next year anyway.
Right.
So
well, I hope
it would be
so.
Sort of community driven like that, you know.
What the cool thing would be, it would be like your show. You wouldn't it wouldn't necessarily be a UFO conference. It'd be other stuff in there, like alternative everything conference. The alternative history, alternative. There's been conferences like that before, but not with people that would amazingly blow our minds, you and I. Because I'm sure we'd kind of agree on who we'd think was oh God, that's amazing, that's kind of a game changer, and if not, it's a potential game changer kind of thing.
Exactly, yeah. Like, I don't want to, beyond Jason, who I haven't even mentioned this to himself, I wouldn't want to say anybody else, because I don't want to say people that I don't get or I can't, you know what I mean?
I understand.
But the idea would be bring in someone that'll bring in a lot of people, and then fill out the underneath with good stars too.
Yeah.
And not go crazy. I lucked out in a sense. Because the first conference I went to was the X conference, the first one in DC.
Yeah.
And I still tell people about how amazing it was, just the sheer lineup of it.
Yeah.
It was Jim Mars, Linda Moulton House, Dan Friedman, Rich Hoagland. Kennedy Good, Nick Pope, Nick Redfern, Peter Robbins. It was like a murderer's row of top UFO people.
Yeah. Well, he had... What'd you say? Yeah, some of them before they were even big, actually.
Yeah.
Right on the cusp of it.
I think they at least blew two people in from England. It was you got to really... But I presume they lost their shirt, because I think they went... They went out for a year. They did two shows. The second show had somewhat less stars. Then I think they did a third show that was strictly exopolitics stars, and all the big UFO stars were gone.
Yeah.
Then they took a year off. Then they did one more show, and then there was another one after that. So, you don't want to go whole hog and bring every person. You don't want to stack it so much. Well, I guess the point is you have to understand that even if you spend $1 million on the conference, you're not going to bring in more than $1 million. You have to understand there's a certain threshold of what's feasible to spend.
Right.
Which I think is a mistake a lot of people make.
Yeah, well, it's the kid in the candy store thing. And I think Bassett had a lot of personal money he put into it. I don't know if he had any investors, but he sure put on a good show for a couple of years, or a big one anyway.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, it was the kind of thing that would get me to actually pony up the money and fly to Washington, D.C., where it was I can't miss. This is an insane amount of people. I don't think I'm ever going to see this many good people in one day.
Yeah.
No, and I never have. I don't think I've ever seen a conference that stacked.
I don't know if I have either. That's pretty good. I think one of the MUFON conferences I went to, in the late 80s, early 90s, might be in there. The Bill Moore one in 89, I think Jacques Vallée was there, and I think he presented, and I actually talked to him for a little bit. And, God, who else was there? Well, Stan Friedman did something, and, yeah, a lot of these MUFON conferences used to be stacked with these people, too. I don't know who they have at their conferences anymore. Some of them are just people nobody's ever heard of, but the UFO community is very interested because they'll have something like Brad Sparks, dissecting the MJ-12 thing or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was quite the show. I would, I'm glad I went.
Yeah, I'm sorry I missed it. I saw Bassett a few times after that, and he kept saying, "We got to get you out and speak at one of these conferences." Never happened.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of the group pictures here. Who else was there? Michael Sala, Bruce Maccabee, Rich Dolan, Paula Harris, so Grant Cameron. I mean, just insane. Just an insane amount of people. There were so many people, you couldn't even see all the people.
Yeah.
You didn't have time to see them all.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well,
but it was cool. It was like a crazy neophyte back then. I didn't know any of these, I was like, these are stars. And it's like, no, they're just UFO researchers. They're not stars.
Hey, speaking of stars, a guy I keep wanting to get on my show, and he's turned me down once, was Stan Gordon.
Yeah,
you had him on your show, and did he talk? Did he talk about the great Bigfoot flap, 1970s Bigfoot flap in Pennsylvania?
He sure did. That's all we talked about. It was amazing.
Did he talk about that one sighting with the two Bigfoots and the guy going crazy and the whole bit?
Yeah. That's like the signature case of the book. It's insane.
That's like my favorite, one of my favorite UFO cases of all time.
Yeah.
Because it's nuts.
That's really what thrilled me about doing that show. It was like, this needs to be discussed. I can't believe this hasn't been, you know, you know about that. But
well, you got to it before me then, so I got to listen to that show. I want to hear what he says about it. You know, because like, the guy was, you know, that apparently the main witness, apart from like going nuts and rolling around on the ground like a maniac and fighting with the people that came over to try and help him, I guess he kind of went, the nuttiness stayed with him, and his girlfriend or his wife left him, and it like had this horrible, you know, very bad lasting effect on his life.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It was really odd. I think it was Steve Palmer was the guy, but I'm not sure. I'm looking at my thing now, but it was so weird. Because you just don't know. I mean, what if the Bigfoots are like just a projection of from the UFO? It's like a, you know, they send down something to walk around and look around a little bit.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, what? I mean, it brings in a whole bunch of new questions with UFOs and Bigfoot and what is the rule? Maybe they're just as puzzled by the Bigfoot as we are, so.
Well, what the hell were they doing in the same place? That makes, you know, it makes it. And they were glowing, too. Glowing Bigfoots?
Exactly.
Jesus.
Yeah. So, and at that point, it's a pretty credible case. I don't really, I don't see anybody really being like, oh, he made it up. Why would you know, the truth is stranger than fiction. Why would you make that up anyway?
Well, it's not just him. I mean, there were people there, but weren't there like law enforcement people there too that saw some of this?
I think so. Or they came right afterwards where he was like flipping out and everything.
Yeah.
So to the point where it was like, you can't really, you know.
I don't know if it happened as the way it's described, but if it did, it's kind of one of the things that makes me still interested in the subject. What did Stan say about it secondhand here? What were his thoughts on it?
I don't recall, honestly. We taped that like over a year ago, so it's gone out of my mind now.
Well, I'll have to listen to it then. I would really like to hear about that case because I wanted to query him on it. And if there's things lingering that I didn't that you didn't cover with him, maybe I'll try and get him again. He just seemed kind of like, oh, I'm really busy. I can't. Last
How
time
long
I
ago
asked,
was that?
Oh, like 3 or 4 years ago. I asked.
Oh,
him.
Yeah. The book came out like last year. So.
Okay. Yeah, I asked.
Try and get
him.
In touch with him now.
Yeah, I asked him before the book came out. I guess.
Yeah.
Because I saw him at one of the Laughlin conferences, the one Laughlin conference I spoke at, and I spoke to him at length. And he was a nice dude, and I really got along with him well. So I wanted to have him on the show.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
I mean, I think...
People are just busy now.
Yeah.
I said this on another show, too. It's like, there's so many shows that it's harder now to get guests than it was back in the day.
Yeah, because everybody and their brother has a show.
Right. So it's like people are inundated with guests. With you know, guest requests all the time.
Yeah, I've been interviewing people on in some form or another since 1998.
Wow.
On audio. Before that, it was for the magazine. So I got a lot of practice doing it for the magazine, and then now I feel like there's so many people doing it that I just like, why should I even bother? But the thing is, it's not, I think I do it because for the same reason you do it, because I'm curious and I want to hear what these people say. And I want that couple hours with them one-on-one to be able to ask them whatever I want.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's why these other people do these shows too. I'm sure basically for the same reason. Because if they're doing it for their ego or whatever, it becomes obvious very quickly and the show sucks.
Right, and there's no, you know, there's no reward in this as far as, like, fame and fortune or anything. It's, you just do it because you're interested.
I don't know about fortune. Maybe some fame if you've got, like, five people to say, great show, bro. That's about it. That's all you're going to get.
Exactly. But that becomes, like, I mean, you love when people appreciate the show, but it's weird like that because... I mentioned this to somebody a while ago where it's like, at first you're like, wow, these people like it and they want more. And then after a while, it's like, oh, God, these people want more.
Now what am I going to do?
Right. It's like, oh, they just always want more. They just always want more. And it's like awesome that they want more, but at some point you, I don't know.
Well, I think you do it for, it seems to me that you do it for, you know, the pure motivation of, I'm interested and I want to hear what these people have to say. And if people like it, then that's icing on the cake.
Exactly. It's like, if you want to come along for the ride, great. If you think it's crap, then just don't listen. But
yeah,
we're going to do what we want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've weeded out, and maybe you have too on your discussion boards. Most of the people are like, I didn't like that. Why did you ask him that? I don't get that anymore with people. I think that I've kind of weeded those people out by just saying, look, if you don't like it, don't listen. And most of them go away if they don't like it.
Yeah.
Either that or, you know, I've only banned one person off the list ever, so. Because the one time, actually, somebody called Paul a pompous prig. When Paul Kimball, when he said something about, it was about Bud Hopkins. And they were offended by this, I came back on. I was out in the desert, and I saw this, and I said, if I hear one more insult to anybody, me, any of my friends, anybody on the show, somebody baiting into an argument, I'm shutting down all comments, and nobody's ever going to be able to comment on here ever again. Because I'm not here to be a babysitter in a referee fight. So if I have to do that, then forget it. I don't have time for it. And I said,
right,
I don't want an explanation, and I don't want an apology. Just cut it out. I never heard from the guy again.
Yeah, I try to shut down flame wars and stuff because it's just stupid. Most people on my forum just respond to the episodes or talk about crap like baseball and movies and shit. But my forum's taking on its own sort of personality where it's like,
yeah,
don't bother me with all that paranormal stuff.
You have an actual, like, you know, community of people that comment in a nice forum and all that. I've got, like, you know, 10 people. And there's some discussion going on, but I mean, I think I've got a total of like 300 subscribers or something, so it's not like a huge audience. And I don't mind. I like it. I kind of like it that way because I still have a motivation because some people are listening and I still enjoy it. And how many people do you think listen to your show?
A few thousand.
Really? Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I did take a look at the numbers since the last time because we talked about it. Oh, I don't look at the numbers, so finally I got around to looking at it, but it's still hard to decipher.
Yeah. Yeah, Sigrid just said that, don't you remember you have 49 listeners? So, I mean,
well,
I'm not
the facts get in the way of a good argument, right?
Yeah, well, I just don't even care to. I don't care. I mean, I mention it like I do care, but I really particularly don't care how many listeners I have. It's nice to have some. If I had thousands, I guess I'd be happier, but I've got a few hundred and that's fine by me. It's more of a, you know, it's kind of a motivation. If I had three, I'd probably still do the show. I have had three in the past. So, you know, I've had two. I've done shows with nobody listening. So what the hell?
Exactly.
Anyway.
Like I said, it's your own personal journey anyway. It's not really, you know.
Yeah.
If people come along, that's great. If they don't,
yeah,
you're still going to be interested in everything.
And you picked that up like really early, which is why your show's always, I've always enjoyed listening to your show because there's none of that. There's no bullshit. I mean, there's a true curiosity and, you know, just present it to me. All I want to do is hear it and I can believe it or not, but you've got a forum here for a little while and let's have some fun, you know?
Right, right. Well, I've had people like rip on me with like, oh, but all ever says is wow. It's like, if I'm bringing you a show that causes me to be that impressed, then, you know, that's a sign that the show's good. Not that, you know, I know it's sort of a verbal crutch, but at the same time, it's still amazement at what someone's saying.
Yeah.
And to me, that's better than just being like, yeah, okay, all right.
Okay. The fact that I say wow when a guest says something, does that mean I buy his entire his or her story, hook, line, and sinker, and run my life on it? No! It's just
exactly
fun radio.
Yeah. Most of the time, it's like, wow, I can't believe you just said that, or wow. You know? you know? And not even, like, in a bad way. Just, wow, like wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. You know who used to say that all the time? Was Art Bell.
Exactly. So.
He would do that all the time during interviews. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
East of the Rockies? Wow. Huh? Sorry.
I'm in good company.
Yes, you are. Did you model that? Did you model your style on Art there? I don't know.
No, but it's odd because I was talking this with a good friend of mine. We went out for lunch. This is how odd it is. He went to high school with me. I ran into him one day, like 10 years ago. And I was like, I got to get out of here because I'm going home to... I got to go to sleep because I stay up late once and listen to Coast to Coast. And he was like, oh, my God, you listen to Coast to Coast? So we kind of reconnected that way. And really, like, it's just funny that we used to talk about all these people like Friedman and Hoagland and stuff, and now I know a lot of them.
Yeah.
And the weird part was that we always used to talk about Coast to Coast and Rents. And I was on a show a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned Rents, and they had, like, no idea who he was.
Huh.
It's just amazing that Rents has just fallen off the radar so much.
Yeah, I never hear anything about his show or anybody that's on it or anything like that. I actually campaigned to be on the show when Project Beta came out, and they never got back to me. So I said, well, screw you guys. I thought that they had a big audience. I don't know what his audience is now, especially after the international bankers stuff he got involved with.
Oh, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, well, it's the old international bankers story and his adherence or belief in it, I believe. And if people know what I'm talking about, they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he kind of got, you know, he got hurt by the democratization of podcasting and everything.
Yeah, that too.
I think that his, you know, Coast to Coast is a juggernaut. He always was sort of like nipping at their heels, but then all of a sudden everybody had a show and he just couldn't compete.
Right, right. I mean, there's so many choices now. You don't have to, I was saying, well, no, everybody has a show. Actually, in most moments, I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, probably, you know, there's a lot of them that are junk. But, you know, I like Angela Joyner's show. I like your show. I like Ted Torbich's show. God, who else doesn't get too much play? Oh, Paul's got his show back now, Other Side of Truth. And that has, you know, quiet, intelligent, non-commercial discussion of paranormal topics. So
exactly. There's plenty of good shows out there.
Yeah. So, you know, check those other ones out. Not just mine. I'm sure people do. And then there's a lot of more people. It's hard to not have an agenda when you're doing your show and just let people say what they're going to say. And it, you ride that line real well where you just like, you know, you will make it. And we've discussed this before. If you don't agree with the person, you think they're nuts or they just said something totally insane, you let them say what they're going to say. It's totally insane. And let the audience go, my God, that's totally insane. You don't say.
Right. They don't need me to say it's insane.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why I differ with some of these other shows where it's like, I'm not going to call somebody out for saying something insane because it's just going to be butting heads arguing and stuff. There's
yeah.
No point in that.
Either that or you know, you hear the insane thing out of them and then you say, okay, could you explain that a little further? So they can either explain it or dig themselves deeper.
Right, right.
You know,
well, I'm not going to be like, that's bullshit, you're crazy. I'll be like, well, what do you say to the people who say that
yes,
that's crazy?
Exactly.
You know?
Some people would say, yeah.
At least that way I try to treat everybody with respect. I mean, they're taking their time to come on the show, even if they are, like, crazy.
Yeah.
You know?
Unless they're rude or something, then maybe it's a little bit different. Although, yeah, Ray Stanford was rude to Walter that one time when he kept yelling bullshit at him. That show was downloaded quite a lot. It was like the chair throwing episode.
What's the chair throwing episode?
Well, you know, where for the one of the few times ever on my show, somebody got mad and started yelling at someone. Yelling and swearing before, because Walter would start to explain, because Stanford would say, well, where do you get that from? And Walter says, well, I used to be with the Air Force, and we would never bullshit. Before he even get like four words out. He would, Stanford would yell bullshit. I mean, he did it like four times in a row. And Walter started to get really pissed and off mic. I was like, Walter, he's the guest. He's being crazy. He's being very emotional. Just let him blow it off. Nobody really listens to my show anyway. Don't worry about it. And to Walter's credit, he said, okay, fine. But that gets, you know, that got the most listens of anything ever because, the Geraldo where the white supremacist guy threw the chair. That's why I call it the chair throwing episode. Have you had any chair throwing episodes?
No, I haven't had any. I've only had like, Linda Howe was sort of, she sort of was
hostile.
I suppose, yeah. I don't even know if she knew she was being hostile. That's why I had trouble sort of coming up with the word.
Well, so. She did not like your line of questioning, or she was having a bad day or something. I heard that interview, and you told me about it, too, before you posted it. And you just said you were worried that you would, like, pissed her off or something like that. And I said, you know, if she says what she needs to say, then I don't think there's anything to worry about. And there wasn't, I don't think. I mean,
exactly.
The show came off fine.
Just, like, for anyone that thinks like I hate her or something, like I just said it. I actually was like, oh no, I think she hates me. I don't. You know. And I will say this actually, the only other guest that I thought was like really kind of rude, and I'll say this because I'll probably almost never get to interview him again, was the crooked basketball ref.
What?
Yeah, I don't know if you knew, I had the basketball ref that got fired and arrested for fixing games.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah. He wrote a book and I had him on the show, but he was really rude.
It doesn't help his case any, I guess.
I guess, yeah. Well, he had gotten out of jail and everything, but I think he called me like 15 minutes before the interview started and was like, let's just say the interview was at 1 and he called like at 12:30 in the afternoon and he was like, we're still on for 1, right? And I'm like, yeah, well, that's fine. I'm like, if you need to change it, you know, just let me know. It's no problem. And he's like, and his response was something to the effect of, this isn't an exact quote, but the tone is right. He was something to the effect of, no, don't worry about it. Let's just get this over with. So, and I had all these notes, and he blew through like all the notes within the first like hour. And there was still like a half hour left, and I purposely held stuff back because I didn't want to give away all the best, not the best stuff, but like the middle of the road stuff that I thought was interesting. I figured I'd leave out for people to get when they got the book. But,
right.
He blew through all this stuff. Well, finally, I was like, you know what? He just blew through everything I had, so I'm gonna have to start digging into the other stuff that I didn't want to do.
Yeah.
And give away or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So, and it just seemed like he had, you know, he really didn't have any remorse over it. It seemed to me.
Yeah.
It seemed to me that he was just more pissed that he got caught and got mixed up in all this. Which I can understand.
Yeah, well,
no,
that makes sense. I'd be pissed about it, too. It's got caught. That's great. We've got, like, 2 minutes. People know what your website is. It's been all of America. And there is a cornucopia of information, links, audio, articles, everything. It's if you don't know about Been All of America, and if you're listening to my show, you probably do. They're just days of information there. Weeks, probably.
200 episodes. This week was our 200th episode.
That's right. You had your 200th. That's right. 200 episodes. Amazing. I don't even keep track of how many episodes I've had, but I don't even know if it's 200. So congratulations.
Thank you. I tried not to make. We had a really blockbuster guest on, William Zabel, but I didn't want him. I didn't make a big deal out of it. You know, I was kind of just like, all right, well, it's 200. It's, you know.
Right.
It's just cool to do.
Yeah.
So.
Anything that I missed asking you or something you want to bring up or shout out or you got a lingering resentment that you want to air out or anything?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I had a good, this was a fun conversation. It was sort of just all over the place. So.
Well, I didn't.
This is like when it's like when we talk on the phone.
Yeah, well, that's how I try to make my shows. I don't really have a... Unless it's somebody I don't really know real well, like, you know, Nancy Talbot. I didn't know her real well, so that was more like an interview. Or, you know, just somebody I haven't talked to on the phone before. Or I haven't talked to in an interview, like Grant Cameron's interview. That was sort of like more like an interview.
Right.
But you know, whenever you call up and, you know, just about any time you call up... Tim, if you want to come on the show and just shoot the shit, I mean, that's why I like doing this show. I mean, part of it is learning, and part of it is just talking to people that I like to talk to. And then, you know, one of the side benefits is that I get to come to the studio and do it, and you know, rebroadcast it and let people download it and see what they want to say. And people like the show for that. I always get comments saying, you know, we like the conversational tone of the show. So. Thanks so much for coming on and having the conversation, Tim. And we should talk soon, not on the show.
Absolutely, yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on, buddy.
All right, thanks again, Tim. And you know what? I'll call you during the week.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
I'll talk to you later. Good night, Radio Mysterio, so listeners.
Okay, good night, Tim. Thanks. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Tim Benal of Benal of America and Benal Audio. The Benal of America show. Always fun to have him on. I will. Yeah, you know what? The next show's coming in, so let me just play "Louie Louie" by Julie London to play us out, and give me a shout in the comments forums at RadioMysterioso.com. I'll have this show posted within a couple of days, and the people that listen by download and by iTunes can hear it then. Thanks again, and here's a very saccharine version. I think I've played this before, of "Louie Louie" by Julie London.
Jamaica moon above, it won't be long till I see my love. He'll take me in his arms, and then I'll tell him I'll never leave again.